Everybody for being here, obviously a topic that has interest, which is always nice. We have a couple extra guests at the dais today, which I appreciate, in Representative Edwards and Representative Grinlick. Appreciate having you here.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yes. And now we will open a hearing on
the info meeting.
Pardon?
The info meeting.
The informational meeting, thank you. And get our report on the interim committee. So if you want to come forward, that would be great. And hopefully everybody got a copy of the interim report. Thank you very much and welcome. And we'll let you begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the invitation to address the committee today. Linda Ludwig. I'm sitting here in front of you today as the chairperson facilitator of the Senate Bill 887 Annexation Work Group Committee. This was held during this last interim in conjunction with the House Interim Land Use Committee. The chair wanted me to take a few minutes and talk to you about the report. Hopefully you've seen it, probably haven't digested it very much. It's not real exciting reading, but I'll hit a couple of the high points for you today as you begin your discussions about these annexation bills. The Senate Bill 887 Work Group on Annexation was formed after the annexations rose last session during the 2005 legislative session. The work group was a component of Senate Bill 887 that was passed. Work group members in the front of the report came from all sides of the land use arena. The League of Cities was represented with a different representative than myself. Washington County, the Association of Oregon Counties, Special Districts Association, the Home Builders Association, the Oregon Bankers Association, the Association of Realtors, Thousand Friends, Business Interests, Friends of Bull Mountain, Oregon Communities for a Voice of Annexation were all represented in that committee. The report was intended to be a record of the discussions and recommendations from the work group, in addition to hopefully being a reference that can be used as an educational tool about our existing annexation processes and how they compare to other states' annexation processes. These processes, case law, statutes are complex, and I know several of the committee members have been utilizing this report as a reference. Want to clarify for the folks that are in the hearing room with us today, as well as committee members, no legislation or LCs came forward from the work group effort. Our charge was to deliver a report, look at annexation methodology to the House Interim Committee for consideration. The report records the work group's 27 consensus recommendations. Those are located on pages 21 through 26. And I was very surprised that the work group was able to make this number of recommendations. When we began our discussions, I really wasn't sure that we could agree given the wide extent of how we viewed land use and annexation, that we could come together and provide any recommendations. But there are a couple that I'd like to call your attention to now. The foundational issue in the report is fairly simple, and it is simply that annexation processes do not integrate well with the other state land use requirements such as urban growth boundary implementation and the 20-year land supply. Annexation processes and procedures, for the most part, were adopted by the legislature prior to the inception of the land use planning program, Senate Bill 100 in 1973. Because of this, areas within our UGB are added to the UGB that have been planned to develop at urban levels can, at times, we see them being stymied by the annexation processes, which can be problematic for local governments, cities in particular, and who have invested considerable public dollars in time in order to meet the requirements of the state's land use program. This situation is virtually unique to Oregon, as Northern State has a UDB requirement for implementation that's coupled with fairly stringent annexation law requirements. This situation, although it's big picture, needs to be at some point remedied, hopefully sooner than later, in a way that integrates our state program law with our annexation methodology and our need for effective and active citizen involvement. I've spoken to the Senate Bill 82 Big Look Committee with several other of the work group members about those concerns. Three other important items in the report are annexation issues are not the same in all parts and all regions of our state. That became kind of a platform for the members to be able to look and evaluate the different political issues that are associated with annexation. Not all regions or communities have like patterns of development or the same vision for their future. The second of those items are the provision of services are not the same in all parts or all regions of the state. In the majority, in most areas of our state, cities provide essential services. However, there are many county and special service districts, and especially that provides services in our metropolitan regions. Those number close to 1,000, and they provide those necessary services as well. Service provision looks different in different parts of the state. And lastly, the work group concluded that increasing the amount of citizen involvement and the timeliness of that involvement is perhaps the single largest fix in mitigating the political nature of annexation. I could talk at length about the report, about methodologies and case law, but I think that gives you a little bit of the overview. If you have questions, I certainly can answer them.
Questions from the committee and our guests? Yes. Representative Edwards.
Thank you for being here to kick off this committee hearing. Certainly an important issue for my constituents. You said there's a set of 27, I think you said, consensus recommendations. Were the rules adopted by the work group, do those define consensus as unanimous, or how many folks could disagree and still have that recommendation labeled as consensus?
Actually, Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, the consensus recommendations were supported by the full spectrum of the work group members. Also in the report for your late night reading is what I call the entire kitchen sink, or everything that we talked about by the work group members. Those are not necessarily a list of consensus items. The entire kitchen sink runs on page 27 through 29. So I thought that was important that all Oregonians as well as legislative members could see the full breadth of our discussions.
So you said the consensus items recommended support from the range of interests. I am looking for a definite. Is that unanimous, or is that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, to the very best of my memory, I would say that all the committee members that were present and actively engaged in the meetings did support the 27 consensus items. Okay. We tried to word them in the report so that they were articulated as such that support could be garnered by the full committee.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Bopas.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Linda, obviously, because it's 3.5 pounds and there's 27 recommendations in it, it wasn't the charge of the work group, but it seems that you're suggesting a fairly comprehensive overhaul of the existing annexation system. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bogus, it's a very leading question. I would say absolutely. Our system of annexation is very complex. It's confusing at best to legislative members. It's confusing to local governments in the field. It's confusing to our citizenry. It is also confusing and conflicting with other land use program requirements that local government cities have to deliver on. We would be, my opinion as a work group chair, much better served if we could come up with a simplified system that did also support the other requirements of our land use planning program.
I think that's a yes, Mr. Thank you.
Other questions from our committee members? Yes.
Question about the regions of the state. Did you talk about how many different regions you might consider to have different issues? Because I would assume, is Eugene the same as Portland in this issue? Because I know where I come, Southern Oregon, that the issues are a lot different down there than they are up here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, we didn't identify regions as such in breaking up the state in terms of regions. However, we did pay special attention to areas that were rising to the surface of attention in annexation. The coast being one, Southern Oregon being another, Washington County doing things differently in the Bull Mountain situation there, Santa Clara River Road, another region you could say or area that was having a bit of spotlight being put on in terms of current annexation issues, concerns. It was more that level than looking at breaking up the state. However, we did hear from the folks at COCO, Central Cities Organization, what was happening in Central Oregon. So I think we got a fairly good flavor, although we weren't very official in terms of looking at different regions, making recommendations per region.
Other questions? Okay, I want to thank you, Linda. I mean, this isn't the most thrilling reading, but having read through it about a month ago and having looked at it again, you know, I believe almost all of the issues that I could have thought of are at least highlighted in here. So I think there was a pretty good vetting of all the issues. The fact that we really haven't gotten any legislative out of it speaks to the fact, I mean, any directly from here, speaks to the complexity of it and how it's difficult to come to any necessarily agreement. But, you know, from a perspective of the chair here, I think we have to start moving to those things. And we've talked, and we're going to hear some testimony about some bills here. But from my perspective, this was a really good thing to have done. I mean, it was very good reading for me to get up to speed on a lot of these annexation issues, some of which I would never have even thought were annexation issues. But once you read it, it gets there. So I thank you for this starting point and the time and effort that a lot of people put in on this. Are there any comments that you would like to make?
No, Mr. Chair, just thank you for those words. I'd just like to recognize there are several other work group members that are here in the audience with us today, and you may hear from on the bills. But just again, would like to publicly thank them for their time and attention to this issue that they put in with the work group.
Thank you very much. We will close that our informational hearing on annexation in Senate Bill 887. And now we will open a hearing on House Bill 2050, House Bill 2638, and House Bill 2760. Just felt it would be easier to open them all at one time. And so we'll take people in as they want to do testimony and then get it out. And we have some people, some representatives that we'd like to get to. I just saw Thunder Walker as well. So our first group of people to speak, and they can speak to any of the bills, will be Representative Greenlick, Representative Edwards. Senator, would you like to come up as well? I think Representative Clem is one of the sponsors, so you can either go there or stay here. And Representative Greenlick is going to, I think, stay up here to testify because it's a little bit easier for us.
I'd ask if I could stay here.
That would be easier.
Well, you're giving up your seat of power.
I'll stay in the middle so I can get them all sick. I'm a bacterial infection now, no longer viral. So
okay.
Great.
It's great easier.
Yeah.
So with that, we can begin. And Representative Greenlick, you want to go ahead? Then we'll go to Senator.
I'd be happy to. And if I could also ask permission from ILA to hold the map up over here in a few minutes, I would appreciate that. Yeah, the report's a very interesting report. And I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, and a district that has annexation is a very important piece of of its issues. Annexation is both is basically covered in two major sets of statutes, 195 and 220. And I'm here to talk specifically about 220.750, which is the island annexation issue. Originally, the notion was that if there were a few lots, several lots inside a city, and those lots were receiving city services, then a city ought to be able to just annex those lots without much fuss and bother and without much of an election. And that did make sense and continues to make sense. But the problem is that cities have taken to using island annexation in a very different way. And 222.750 allows a city to annex areas that are totally within the city without an election of those folks or of the city either. Essentially, you can do it by ordinance. The cities aren't evil in trying to annex things. Cities are basically trying to do what they thought they were instructed to do by the legislature, as I think the report points out, that if people wanted to receive urban services, then they ought to get those urban services inside a city, because cities ought to provide urban services. Well, in Washington County, Representative Mao was asking, in parts of Lane County, in parts of Klamath County, and in some other counties, it doesn't work that way anymore. Urban services are delivered by service districts, so that the folks, half of my district is unincorporated in Washington County, and those folks receive their water from Tualatin Valley Water District. They receive their sewer services from Clearwater Services. They receive their park services by Tualatin Hills Park and Recreation District. They receive their police protection by an augmented contract with the Sheriff's Department to get augmented police services, and on down the line. They receive their services by special districts. You annex into a city like Beaverton, for example, and they would continue to receive their services the same way. So it isn't a matter of now getting urban services, it's a matter of, except maybe for police, it's a matter of basically receiving services the same way. The part my bill, House Bill 2638, talks about is about how cities have taken to creating an island. And it specifically deals with cities doing cherry stem annexations of streets surrounding big parts of unincorporated counties, and in our case, unincorporated Washington County, calling them an island and then annexing them into the city because they are now completely surrounded by the city, even though in some instances half of the boundary is essentially streets that have been annexed. And when you say, well, why would you do that? And the answer is, well, you're using our city services, you're using our street. It's the way you annexed the street surrounding me. I didn't have much any other way to deal with it. And a perfect example is the Cedar Hills Boulevard. I can figure out where Cedar Hills is. It here? This area here is one of the oldest unincorporated areas in town. In the state. That's the Cedar Hills neighborhood, and has about, I think, 5,000 homes in that area. And what Beaverton has done is annexed the streets all the way around it. When Beaverton wanted to get involved with the Bethany area, they were talking about a cherry stem annexation all the way out to 185th and then all the way down Springville Road, essentially, a couple of miles in each direction, annex that, and then all of a sudden you now have a city island. So the only force of 2638 is to simply eliminate from the definition of how an island is formed a street. And it simply says that an island can be formed and can be annexed under 222.750 if it's really an island, but not if a part of the boundary that creates that island is a street. It takes away the ability for a city to annex a street, surround an area by annexing a street, and then declare it an island, and then annex it without authorization of the people. When you think of annexation, we tend to think about it in terms of services, in terms of people want to avoid paying for services they get. People want to avoid taxation. But I argue that when you begin to think of annexation, you really need to be thinking about it in terms of governance. It's really an important, in my mind, even an important constitutional issue. When you annex people into a city without their permission, you're changing how they're governed. And it seems to me people ought to have a voice in how they're governed. So in the last session with House Bill 2484, we required people being annexed under the 195 statutes to have a vote in the say. A couple of these other bills will talk about making sure people get to vote. But what 2638 does, and I urge you to pass 2638, is that it simply takes away the ability of a city to annex streets around an area and then declare the area an island and then annex it without permission of the residents. And it's basically that simple.
Okay. Thank you.
Tom, thank you very much.
Whoever's next.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Representative Chris Edwards. I'm from House District 14, which is West Eugene, Santa Clara, and Junction City. And the affected areas that are really relevant to my constituents are in Santa Clara. And as a piece of my testimony, on the final page, you will see a map, and that shows the checkerboard that we have in Santa Clara between unincorporated County Santa Clara and City of Eugene. So you can, if you're a visual person, you can refer back to that as we talk a little bit. The situation that we have in Eugene is that in 1982, the county and the city established the Metro Plan. And the Metro Plan essentially laid out the idea that within the urban growth boundary, the city would be the provider of services. And then in subsequent years, there were a series of intergovernmental agreements formed between the City of Eugene and Lane County that started to hand those services over to the city. And one of those IGAs stipulated that in order to receive a building permit, one must go to, an unincorporated resident in Santa Clara would have to go to the City of Eugene to receive that building permit. And then, of course, the City of Eugene would not issue that building permit without first bringing that piece of property into the city. And so we have a boundary commission in Lane County, which rules on these requests for annexation. And I will also point out that the Boundary Commission is not locally elected nor locally appointed. It's a 7-member board appointed by the governor. So there's not a whole lot of local, I would argue, there's not a whole lot of local input into the process other than public hearings. So while we may not characterize those requested annexations as being forced annexations, I would argue that they are indeed coerced annexations, because in order to get full enjoyment and use of your property, then you have to play by the rules and you have to suck it up and go ask for an annexation. Now, I have a problem with that, with that aspect of the current law and situation in Lane County. And to add the cherry stem street annexations on top of those coerced annexations, I think is just adding insult to injury. So, I actually had a hard time believing that this was actually happening until I went to a few Boundary Commission meetings. And so, wow, this is, I was really, really surprised by how egregious the process is and just flying in the face of what folks, local residents are wanting, because once you annex that street or that road, then you can essentially be encircled. Your neighborhood could be encircled.
and then can be forcibly annexed under the island annexation provisions of our law. House Bill 2638, Representative Greenlick's bill, is a good bill. It doesn't address everything in my district, and which is why I've put forth House Bill 2760. And there are three basic provisions of House Bill 2760. First, it establishes a standard that must be met before annexations could move forward. And the annexing city would need to establish that there's clear and convincing evidence that the services they are to provide are necessary. Because as Representative Greenlick articulated, Santa Clara, much like the areas that he spoke of, is serviced by service districts. The second provision would eliminate the use of public rights of way, as Representative Greenlick's bill would do, but it would also eliminate the use of intermittent streams. And I think 2638 is not clear in defining whether or not an intermittent stream can be used as a boundary. And we do have, in fact, some streams that are culverted and just run through the middle of a neighborhood. But I think that they could be used actually as a boundary, even if 2638 were to pass. And then the third provision would be to provide some sort of flexibility to the taxpayer should an annexation occur through a tax. Now, the original version said a property tax phase-in. We've since received an opinion from Legislative Council that a phase-in would not be constitutional, and so we are proposing that we would amend this to the property tax deferment for X number of years or until the property is sold, whichever would come sooner. So those are the basic provisions of 2760, and I would submit to you in relation to each one of those, specifically with provision number one, the clear and convincing evidence standard, that it is, in my opinion, if we simply ask the inverse, it's hard to argue. Should we be able to annex on hazy and speculative evidence or on sketchy evidence that the services are needed? And I think that the clear and convincing is a really reasonable standard. I've also heard it claimed by annexation proponents that unincorporated residents are essentially freeloading off the city. And I guess what I would argue is that if indeed they were, first of all, they have their services through their special districts. And if there are soft services or some intangible services and benefits that are to be derived that are not a direct cost to the city, then I would submit that a city, if they were proposing to move forward with an annexation, ought to propose to lower everybody's property taxes. Because if you bring more people into the pool, and there's a certain amount of fixed cost to run that pool of services, then I'll be costing the city less. And I've never heard that type of an offer made. I think if it were made, it would certainly advance the arguments of folks that favor annexations. To the second provision of the bill, the intermittent streams and eliminating the use of intermittent streams and public rights of way, I guess I really don't need to speak to that anymore. I think Representative Greenlick spoke to that. It's really been, I would just reiterate that it's been the most egregious practice, I think, in our area, in Santa Clara, and it really has been a situation of adding insult to injury. And then finally, many folks have lived in Santa Clara for 40 years. And many of Santa Clarans are elderly, and they have a long history in the area. and they're not in a financial situation to bear a 71% increase in their property taxes overnight should a legitimate annexation move forward. And so I think the property tax deferment is really a item of fairness to them, and allowing them to really plan for life circumstances and whatnot. And overall, I think to summarize the bill and what I hope that we see out of this legislative session is that the annexation scheme that we have in place currently in Lane County is absolutely broken, and it's really destroyed the trust between citizens and government. And I would submit that any benefit that is gained by the cities through these type of undemocratic practices is more than lost in destroying trust in the citizens. And I mean, this is just a basic issue of basic representation in our local democratic process, and we really do need to fix the process. And I look forward to working as hard as I can to get some fixes done this legislative session. So I urge you to pass House Bill 2760.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7, and Representative Edwards' district is half of my district. And I'll be brief because I have to get back to my committee that I am in. You have seen a number of these issues over the years. This is my ninth year in the legislature, and every session we deal with annexation, and Representative Smith's been around a while. She has seen that as well. We have chipped away at the edges a bit and have done some good things, but there's still a lot to be done. I've not yet read the report because I've not received it. I'll ask Ms. Ludwig to get me a copy. I know she will. But there are serious problems. And I lived in Santa Clara when I was in the second grade when President Kennedy was shot and killed, and I was living in Santa Clara going to Santa Clara Elementary School. The elementary school has now been burned to the ground by a couple of wayward youth who were busy with matches, which is unfortunate, but the district had already turned it into surplus property. But that area of Eugene is not Eugene. It was rural. It was all orchards and farms and rolling land and countryside, and we lived out there as a kid. My father built our house. It was a small development. It's now much larger out there. But it's not that these people are freeloaders. They settled there with the understanding they were out in the county and they were not part of the city. The city has encroached upon them. The city has come to them, sometimes willingly and sometimes unwillingly. So I agree that there are lots of issues that need to be resolved around annexation. The City Council of Eugene has decided to take a different approach now that there is sufficient animosity built up between the River Road Santa Clara neighbors and the city. And so they're taking a slower approach to it. You will see this session a bill coming from my side of the building, Senate Bill 417, which I co-sponsored with Representative Edwards and other members to abolish the Lane County Boundary Commission. I appreciated Representative Vicki Berger's work on that bill last session, but I was pressed to the wall, as all of us Lane County legislators were, to not see that bill come to fruition because the City of Eugene was happy with the Boundary Commission. Well, they might have been happy, but my constituents, my residents who live out there, are very unhappy. It's an antiquated system. It doesn't work. As Representative Edwards pointed out, they're not elected officials. They're appointed by the governor, and they just do not seem to represent the views of our constituents. There is pretty widespread agreement that we will get there on Senate Bill 417 and abolish the Boundary Commission. They are resolved. inclined to accept that fact that they're going away, but it is not a simple matter. It's a matter now of deciding who all is taking up the work that they did, which jurisdictions, and how do we separate it out and close it down. So we actually have a work group on Friday to continue working on that proposal. So, but I guarantee you, you will see it on your side of the building, and it is just one other small step in this very large problem that we have. So I wish you well on all of these annexation issues. I'm glad you're doing the bulk of the work on your side, and I'll just give you my piece and appreciate the time that you gave me today.
Thank
you. I'll scoot off to my committee. Thank you.
We also want another representative to come up when you're leaving, and
okay.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brian Clem, State Representative here for portions of Central Salem and East Salem and unincorporated Marion County residents who live just east of the city of Salem and what many of you would think is Salem but is in fact not Salem. And I'm not going to actually go into all the specifics on the bill because I think it's been covered quite well. I have a few other bills that also deal with annexations and people's, essentially in my view, right to vote, where in some cities in Oregon we have charter amendments that require annexation elections to be held citywide. What I found when I began canvassing door-to-door is that the folks in the county who were being annexed didn't get to vote in that election. So I went to city council and asked, please let them vote. And the interpretation by the current city attorney, at least, was that that would then create a double majority situation, even in the island annexation, which it's not really clear in the law that is what the current statutes call for, but that was the interpretation. So my council had really no choice to allow people to vote in the election without forcing it to become essentially a situation where two or three people could have vetoed the rest of the city. So one of the commitments I made to my constituents and to the city council, who I, you know, sort of argued vociferously that they should do this was the right thing to do, was that I would help clarify the statutes so it's very clear that the people could be included in the vote in cities where we have votes, and that bill will be forthcoming. I have another bill that essentially argues that islands shouldn't be that big. Islands should be small and not giant, so it limits the size of the island. Because once you get to 10 or 15,000 people, like my islands are, that's whole cities. That's not really a street or a neighborhood. That's a whole city worth of people being in an island. So I guess in general what I want to say is, when you go watch one of these city council hearings, the folks in the county who come to testify have no voice in the city council room because they're not in the city. They haven't voted for city councilor. I am their voice. I am their only voice. Their county commissioners don't have jurisdiction to speak to these issues. And I am going to do whatever I have to do to make sure that they get the right to vote in these elections. And at a bare minimum, that's my bottom line, is that people need to be able to participate in this process. In other areas where they don't have elections, we're going to have to figure out what to do for folks when they don't have an election on their ballots and they're not represented at city council either, or boundary commission, it sounds like, either. What are we going to do? So I do think we need to be reasonable. You know, I have some members of my constituency who have views that are far more rigid than my own on this topic. I think we do need to be reasonable, but there are some bottom line changes that have to be made, and I thank you for the opportunity to get some of this stuff on the record. There's going to be more. It's going to be ongoing. It's like my Measure 37 committee after this. There are many challenges revolving property rights and people's feelings, but I feel we're going to be able to get some serious resolution to a lot of the questions, because I've had a lot of conversations. I think people are tired of warring over this, and we actually will get some consensus around the remaining, and mostly island, statutes. Thank you.
Representative Crummell, and we'll open up the questions for everybody after that. So, Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, State Representative Jerry Crummell, House District 26, which includes Wilsonville, Sherwood, and over to Gaston. I came in a little bit as Representative Greenlink was finishing up, Mr. Chair, and he's absolutely right. The big issue with regards to this is governance. And people want to have the opportunity to choose their own governance. And in annexation processes, they're not necessarily always given that opportunity. The area in my district that is primarily involved heavily with annexations has been Bull Mountain. I have the south side of the mountain is part of my district, and Representative Galizio has the other half of Bull Mountain in his district. For the folks on the south side, and it's interesting because the south side of Bull Mountain is rural Washington County, and in my district, the north side, Representative Galizio's side, is already incorporated into the city of Tigard. And I won't go over all of the history of this, but in a nutshell, because of agreements with Washington County, the city of Tigard was managing Bull Mountain, and it morphed into coerced annexations where they were forcing developers trying to develop, or even property owners, and if they wanted a permit to do some kind of improvement on their property, they were having to then agree to be annexed into the city of Tigard. A lot of them didn't want to be, and actually this ended up going into a situation where last November there was an election held regarding the creation of the city of Bull Mountain. The interesting thing about that whole deal is that the city of Tigard, quite frankly, tried to queer the deal by going in and trying to annex property that was part of the feasibility and would have become part of the city of Bull Mountain had that measure passed. And had the measure passed, it probably would have wound up in court because of the actions of the city of Tigard. So as you can see, it's a very interesting and contentious issue. And on Bull Mountain and with the city of Tigard, neither side trusts the other side. And it's very contentious. And they would just as soon throw daggers at each other as to sit down and talk with each other. And it's a very unfortunate situation. I would agree. I think that we really need to look at all of the annexation statutes and see where we can do some streamlining. And I would argue that there's a lot of areas where they can be streamlined. And I think that it can be streamlined without the residents losing their voice and losing their ability to vote on these issues. All of the bills in front of you, except for 2760, oh, wait, I'm wrong. All of the bills in front of you, except for 2638, have the phase in as far as the property taxes are concerned. I think that's a good thing to put into the statute. What's unfortunate is that it's already available for cities to be able to negotiate with property owners and with areas about annexation, about how their property taxes would be affected. But you have some cities out there, as one formerly mentioned in my testimony, that doesn't at this point isn't real interested in negotiating with the people that they're going to annex, and isn't real interested in negotiating with them on the tax issues and that sort of thing. It's unfortunate that that's the case, because actually the way the Lincoln Tower by Washington Square and the Washington Square area was able to be annexed into the city of Tigard was because those types of negotiations occurred, there was a phase-in of property taxes, and everybody came away compromisingly happy. And I say that because as we all know, that sometimes what compromises create is, you know, a little bit of everything for everyone to hate and a little bit for everyone to love, thus you have a compromise, and that was probably the case, but that has worked very well. It's unfortunate that the city of Tigard didn't choose to use that sort of mechanism on Bull Mountain. So the bills that are in front of you, I think, in some respects, could probably be mushed together into one. And in some respects, I think that's what 2760 does, is kind of tries to sort of mush everything together and make it work. I'm a co-sponsor on all three of the bills, and I'm happy to see all of them go through. Or if you want to mush them together, I'm happy that way, too. And I would yield to the chair and the vice chair and Representative Greenlink in terms of how that's put together. But we definitely do need to address these issues. And, Mr. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
So, committee, any questions for any of these panel members? Representative Booker.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, I have a question for all of them because I'd like an answer from each of the sponsors, since you were so kind to tell me that there might be a work group and I might be participating, so I better pay attention. All three of the bills, of course, are trying to prevent the use of public right-of-ways for surrounding and creating the islands. All three of the bills define the quantitative portion that can surround or be used for those right-of-ways as that word. And I think they all have the exact word. It's surrounded by, in part, by a portion of the city that consists of only the public right-of-way. I'd like each of the members so that I can understand, how do you define portion? Are we talking a third of the way around? Are we talking a quarter of the way around? Are we talking a half a way around? Are we talking 1,000 feet? I mean, what is a portion in your mind, which is really the guts of all three of these bills?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the intent, and I don't have the language right in front of me. I left it up over my seat up there. I believe the idea is that it cannot the public right of way cannot be a portion of the boundary or a portion of the boundary of the island. And so let's see, it's surrounded in part by.
Actually, that's
no. You want to?
Yeah, that's language the LC put on.
That's why I want to know what you want.
And what
LC wrote.
And what it means is, right now you're talking about being surrounded by a city, and the question is, if any portion of that surround is a public right of way, then it isn't an island.
So 10 feet. Well,
so it could be one block of a right of way. If they simply just created, in order to create the island, annexed one block, that would be a portion. But the fact is, that's usually not what we're talking about. What we're usually talking about is a third of the surround, or 40% of the surround, is by only a right-of-way and nothing else. So, but the portion refers to the portion of the city that is the surround to create an island.
So I'll ask the clarification.
It's a little weird.
Clarification question from the chairs. So what you're saying is, if any of it, if it isn't an island in the sense of the city is surrounding it, if the city's gone out and picked up any part of a right-of-way, then it would no longer be an island. It would have to be annexed through a different
through probably 195 processes rather than 222 processes.
Okay. That makes some sense.
So then in your case, 0 feet is the right.
Well, actually, not quite. Because it's clear to me that if you imagined a surround, and the surround had streets running through it, that might be 10 feet or something, right? It would be 40 feet. And it's certainly no intention that not be included. I mean, because you could have a street running diagonally through that. But it's if it's any... you know, sort of vertical portion rather than the roadway itself, I think that would count.
Okay, clarification, Chair. Because you used one third before, but you're talking something practical like 10 or 15% of hodgepodge roadways. Okay.
Yeah.
And Mr. Chair, I need the answer for
yes,
this
I
one
got it.
Too.
Yeah, you got Clem up here has to answer it too. Yeah. So.
I think in reading the bill, it means 1 inch. But if you want to know, you know, what I'm really looking for, in my particular district, the encircling of an area has been via property, not road. I have heard conversations that the road could be annexed, and then that would seal the deal right there. But I think I'm open to discussions, you know, as part of the work group process about what, you know, are there situations where it is clearly not the intent of the city to use the road to create the island, but for whatever reason, just the physical characteristics of the situation, or that's the only remaining piece, you know, an urban growth boundary or something else. So I think it's clear that, for me, that we try and get out of the practice of You can't judge intent in the statute. That's the hard part, you know, just by saying the intent. So then you have to define it as something that seems rather, you know, outrageous in size, and then all of a sudden you have the intent. But I'm willing to listen to what actually occurs out there in the cities and see if there are situations where, you know, I can feel comfortable that that was not the intent. It's the natural characteristic that creates it. If I, you know, come to believe that the intent factor's too hard to judge, then yeah, we're going to have to pick a limit on, you know, an actual amount of footage or mileage or sides of the island or certain, you know, percentage of the circumference. I mean, this could get sort of crazy, but I think we should work on it.
Well, I think you can use words like incidental. I mean, I think there are words that are used in statute that would cover this.
Yes, Representative.
Yeah. One of the things that in talking with constituents of mine and some who will probably testify here today, I have really been focusing on defining what can't be used as a boundary for an island. I'm just throwing this out there that maybe the better approach is to define what can be used.
Okay.
I don't know. So it's that way we would get away from this long laundry list of stuff that we probably haven't even anticipated in this bill. So.
I think thank you, Mr. Yep. Chair, and Mr. Chair, and Representative Boquist. I think that the way the language reads right now, I would have to agree with Representative Clem that if any part of it is only the public right of way, then that would negate the city from being able to annex it. And I think that a more reasonable approach would be to either put a percentage of the total or to look at it and see what kind of language we might be able to put in there that would make it extremely clear that you know, if one side of it is, as Representative Greenlink was mentioning, if one side, for example, is incidental to the fact that it's only a right-of-way and the property on the other side of it is not annexed into the city, that it might still be not permissible for the city to be able to annex in property if all the other sides are surrounded. So it really is surrounded by the city, except you got this road out here. So I'm not sure how Legislative Council would define that, but I'm sure that they, you know, they work a lot of magic with words, so maybe they could. And I'm open to suggestions also, as Representative Clemens mentioned, with regards to what the cities would find not too objectionable. I mean, I realize that the cities may be, you know, a little bit anxious about these bills coming forward and a little bit upset, but at the same time, you know, I think that we've got other interests at work here.
Follow up,
Vince, because, I mean, are you amenable to the term Representative Greenlick put up as insignificant? Is that a term that...
Or incidental.
Yeah, incidental is what I said.
Incidental.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and Representative Boquist, yes, I'm open to looking at the language and massaging it a little bit so that we can make sure that we're getting to the intent of what all of us, I think, on these bills are trying to get to, while at the same and protecting the citizens that, you know, really don't have an interest of being governed by a city, but it's only kind of becoming a land grab for the city.
Okay. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll throw this question actually to the various sponsors. The aim of these bills is to avoid sort of artificial encirclement, and I think that that's a sound public policy. The terminology that's used in the bills, all of these, is public right-of-way, and something that caught my eye on the chart that Representative Greenlink showed us was that the Highway 26 was apparently part of that encirclement, and when I think about, I don't even know what's involved in annexing what I think of as part of our interstate highway system, but it does seem to me that secondary roads, that is, roads other than interstate highways, are in a different category, and so the idea that we would be removing interstate highways from the encirclement process, that doesn't necessarily seem sound to me. It seems like that if you had everything, the city had grown completely around an area other than the area that's an interstate highway, that seems
it's,
like...
It's not the interstate highway it's using. It's using roads.
Okay, so there's like a frontage road or something. No. That's the...
Yeah. I mean, only Coburg can...
That's
annex the interstate.
I'd like to throw out an idea for whatever work group is going to work these bills, is that it seems to me that an interstate highway ought to be treated the same way as a body of water. That is, it's a complete barrier, and that if a city has encircled on all sides other than what is an interstate highway, that's like a river or a bay or something. It seems to me it ought to be treated in that same way.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity.
We do have a number of people, so we're going to kind of limit testimony to 2 or 3 minutes apiece if you can. We, just so people feel a little more comfortable, this will not be the last hearing on this. What I have anticipated, and you can tell by the questioning, that we will be putting together a work group, and we'll get some people from other groups together to do some stuff and come back, because there are also... Another group of bills that have not even got sent to our committee yet, but we anticipate they will be. So the intention here is that we are going to move some things to fix some of this annexation and make it more clear to people in our state. And I feel pretty committed. I think most of the people in the, up here are committed to some of that. So we will be working. But in the meantime, we need to get some testimony. We need to get some ideas on the table so that that work group can have some things to work with. So we'll start with, we'll put them up, and we'll bring 3 or 4 of you together, and then you can make your comments. We'll see if we'll try to keep people that are against or for together. Sorry, I won't do that. So, Councillor Gretchen Beener from Tigard, and it also looks like. City Councilman Brent DeHart and Klaus, or is that Klaus?
Childe?
Okay, thank you. You can.
Oh, yeah, right.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Gretchen Beener. I'm a newly elected city councilor in Tigard, and I live on Bull Mountain. And in fact, the primary reason I ran for council is related to annexation issues on Bull Mountain. And I with all due respect to Representative Krummel, he's a little out of date on Tigard City policy. We do have a policy of offering folks that annex several years to bring in your full taxes. We've also had we call it annexation sale. It's waived the annexation fees. To also update the committee, the property that Representative Krummel referenced last summer was almost all of it was property that was owned by the city of Tigard. And the city did not particularly want its property in another city, since it was dedicated for farm parkland. The city really wanted its own parkland in its own city, but that's a whole other issue. Okay, I've lived on both sides of the hill, both in the city and outside of the city, and I chose to move into the city because I got tired of not getting the services that I wanted from the county. And we are different in South Washington County in that we don't have the park district. And so the county does not have a park district at all. There are 2 parks in the entire county. And so all the park services in the areas that not served.
2 parks in Washington County?
Yes, other than in the Twelton Hills Park and in the cities. The county only has 2. Excuse me. The other issue has to do with what we're looking at in terms of violence. There's actually three different kinds of violence. And I asked the work group, the interim work group, to address issue number one, and they chose not to do that. We have an island that is totally surrounded by cities that is located in Washington County. It's totally surrounded by Portland, Beaverton, and Tigard. That was that is east entirely of Highway 217, and then on the other side it's bounded by the city of Portland. Beaverton has annexed some small portions of that, but the Raleigh Hills, Garden Home, West Slope, and Metzger area is largely an island. It's several miles for the Washington County Sheriff. They have to drive a minimum of 4 or 5 miles through either Beaverton or Tigard to get to that island. And I suggested that that's maybe a special case issue that should be addressed somehow. I'm not taking a position, but I think it is a particular case. The second situation we have are the small islands. And this map that I have here has our islands in pink, and you will notice that most of them are little tiny parcels. Well, Tigard over the years has actually been very conservative. We had a large island that was called the Walnut Island that was totally surrounded by the city of Tigard and was not annexed until there was a massive failure of septic systems, and basically the predecessor to Clean Water Services said, thou shalt annex so that we could get sewers in there. As far as...
If you can wrap it up.
Yeah, I'm going as fast as I can.
I know.
We also have the issue that you were just addressing about roads.
Right.
And you will probably not be able to see. Okay. Our border... down here, we have, this is Deep Bend Road. The city of King City owns Deep Bend Road to the center line. It is impossible for the county or for the city of Tigard to take jurisdiction of that road without basically creating the other half of the road without creating islands. That seems to be a somewhat unusual situation. You'll see the majority of the area up to 133rd is in the city, but there are pockets that are not in the city. It's an issue that the city is going to have to address. The city has chosen not to have an aggressive policy about islands for many years. As you can see, we haven't annexed all of these islands. Quite frankly, it's been an issue that we discussed in our city council meeting a couple of weeks ago. And if these bills go through, we're concerned, are we going to be forced to annex them before the effective date of the bills? So it's a problem. We're trying to do outreach. And I will also tell you the irony of the Bull Mountain incorporation proposal was that after the vote, we have received almost 100 requests for annexation to our city from folks right along. And finally, we have an issue on a potential cherry stem. We have a group of citizens that live about 300 feet away from being contiguous to the city that would like to annex. And the city just has a policy, it's never done cherry stems. But, gee, is this something we should be looking at to get to this particular group of folks? And we haven't made a decision, but I'm raising the issue from the context that there's more than one side to every issue. So I hope that you will look at this from the perspective that, you know, your smaller islands, we shouldn't be messing with them. And what kind of percentage, as Representative Bocas was saying, do we want to have in terms of a road around, have we created an island? It's a tough issue, and I wish you all well in continuing.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. I'm Brent DeHart. I'm a Salem City Councilor here. And have been for a few years, and we have Klaus with us as a city staff in the planning department. I thank you for the opportunity to talk on this issue. Obviously, we don't have anything to talk about in annexations or any problems. The city of Salem does oppose all three of these bills, all work against the interests of cities in Oregon. We as cities already struggle with an annexation system that's complex, as we heard earlier, outdated, inconsistent with state goals, and I really want to press upon that today, in land use laws. So in our feeling, these bills would make a bad situation worse. And there's been a lot of talks about services. I want to add into that conversation planning, because Oregon land use goals in a land use system necessitates the city's ability to plan uses. So the DLCD, through the periodic review process, is requiring cities to plan for and mitigate for transportation systems, alternatives, densities, mixed use, land use integration, all of these things. Yet these are forces that are just outside our limits, but they become part of our responsibility, and yet there's nothing we can do about them. What happens inside the UGB, the urban growth boundary, affects us, but we have no ability to affect them until annexation occurs. In our testimony, we did submit written testimony. We do have a map, which I would point out to, which Representative Klein is very familiar with. And I was glad he used these things as a sizable whole city. And I appreciate that. Inside our urban growth boundary, we have two islands that are the sizes of small cities, which come into play. Now, we can't control if there's sidewalks there, much less if there are bike paths or alternative transportation modes. We have to plan for the traffic levels. It gets down to street light placement, frequency, duration, timing, based on populations from which we receive no income and whose growth and sprawl we can't control. This is a serious planning issue. And in this land use system after SB 100, as you heard from the work group, some of these annexation things have become antiquated and too complicated. In another example, we put in larger water and sewer pipes at the expense of citizens to plan for the growth inside the UGB, which is supposed to be urbanized, which may or may not ever come into the city, depending on how many restrictions the legislature puts on the city's ability to annex. We would like to see you streamline our ability to annex. We think it makes more sense. And if you believe in our land use system, where we are going to urbanize inside the urban growth boundary, we need to be able to prudently and responsibly, fiscally plan for those things. All of them, include the right-of-way. I would tell you, as a counselor, I'd like to see us be able to use the urban growth boundary as a border for annexation, similar to the comment about the interstate or a body of water. The urban growth boundary, we could have this situation, entire cities fully developed inside our urban growth boundary with no opportunity to annex or receive taxation, which I feel is an equity issue. Also, and I'm going as fast as I can, Mr. Chair.
I know.
Okay.
You're just about 2.5. So
also, in regards to the convincing and evidence an annexation is necessary to provide essential municipal services, I think we're adding bureaucracy and red tape. I think it's unnecessary. I don't see why. I'd like that why question to be answered definitively. It does not further the state's land use goals. It does not aid the city. And it makes the inevitable just more costly, more lengthy, and more unnecessarily complicated. And the other thing on House Bill 2050 I'll touch on is the phasing in or deferral of taxes. Obviously, from a city's point of view, that's not going to be too popular. We can imagine sending half a crew of paramedics, or limiting the number of library books a child can check out, or limiting the number of children that a family can register in our recreation programs. They have full benefits of being a citizen, and we think they should have the full responsibility shared with the rest of us. I am going to cut short then my comments with just the conclusion from the written testimony, which is a quote from the Oregon Court of Appeals. And in the Court of Appeals, quote, it quotes Luba, and they're both in concordance here in the case Kane versus City of Beaverton. As Luba appropriately observed, there are a number of rational and legitimate reasons for the disparate treatment of island territories. And the quote from Luba is, an obvious reason is to reduce jurisdictional confusion, a concern that is generally not present in more ordinary annexations of contiguous lands. Other reasons are to improve administrative efficiency or to provide municipal services more efficiently. We certainly believe that to be true, especially in the case of emergency services. That was my own parenthetical comment, by the way. It's not hard to imagine that in most, if not all cases, establishing city rather than county jurisdiction over an area that is entirely surrounded by the city or the city in a body of water will tend to promote administrative, and service efficiencies to the benefit of both the city and the residents of the territory. And that's responsible government, and that's efficient government in providing a rational extension of services and benefits at the same equitable level for all citizens. I'd be happy to take any questions, or if Claude wanted to add in what I missed. Thank you.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair, may I?
Yes.
I see one of the terrible things you view of all three of the bills, it seems so destructive, is this crazy idea that the city must hold public hearings and mail notice to each property owner?
Actually, I don't really have any objection. The city of Salem held 72 hearings last year, so I don't. It's my understanding, and I can't speak for the law, but my understanding is where it's already a requirement, but weren't we be doing it anyway?
So those check marks don't mean that it's necessarily bad.
No, just I think those check marks refer to what the bill would do.
So,
no, we don't have any objection to holding public hearings.
May I ask again then?
Sure.
You've got these check marks. Some of them aren't bad. Is that right?
Included.
Which ones of them are bad and which ones aren't bad?
Mr. Chairman, this is just a comparison.
Oh, make sure you know who you are.
Klaus Schroeder with the City of Salem. This was just to identify quickly the differences between the bills, and the check mark just means that component is included in that particular bill. So it's not negative or positive. It's just it's in that bill.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I don't want to do is debate all the merits of your arguments, because I'm sure we both think we would win. I have lots of experience walking, but I do just want to, for going forward, I had some conversations with our mayor and with other folks from the city. I actually expected to see the city support 2638 based on conversations I've had. So as we go forward into the work group, I've had conversations about other bills that I've had other folks at the city tell me they supported or had no problem with. So we need to speak with one voice. If this represents the city, then we have a problem in the city right now, where some folks have told me they didn't have a problem with the road limitation, and now I understand that you do. So I need one person. I want to make sure this is right, because this is a surprise to me. The other major question, I guess, is what is the city's objection to using the annexation plan method? If you look at the map, folks, what you'll see is these are very large properties. In Bend, when they wanted to do all the way out to the urban growth boundary, sort of like you talked about, and that's our chamber's position, annex to the urban growth boundary, typically you use the annexation plan method, where you go through a huge public process and then you put to a vote whether or not you're going to annex this whole area. Is that maybe the more appropriate method to use, rather than using Cordon Road or properties to island and then they don't get to vote at all?
I can't speak for the public. Your first point was well taken, and I will see if we can get us all speaking the same. So individuals do not speak for the city. As for the second, it's my understanding that the city council has directed the planning department to work towards the annexation plan as a method in the future, but we're not on those stages yet. In general, the testimony is meant to make a clear statement that we oppose any additional restrictions on our ability to annex. Any additional complications or restrictions on our ability to annex.
Follow up? Again, for the one voice thing, I have some additional restrictions which would include the people's ability to vote in the election. I've had your mayor tell me she has no problem with that. What you just said is no additional restrictions. So including things that of any kind, or just these ones in these bills?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Clem, Representative Clem, I also wouldn't have a problem with that.
Okay.
But it has not gone through the legislative subcommittee or the council body.
Right, gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Okay, quickly, yes.
Yeah, thank you for coming to testify. And I'm funny to say, but I'll limit my comments. I would like on the public record to know that I am thankful that the city of Eugene has not adopted this. They've said, let's just back off on some of these road annexations, cherry stems, and they're clearly not taking the same approach right now that you're articulating that is apparently the city of Salem's attitude about annexations, and I'm thankful for that. And I guess I just wanted to say that you made a few comments about how the annexation restrictions work against the interest of the cities, and I... and then you also
made mention to, we can't control them if they're outside the city, and yeah, that's the point. I think that we ought to have a voice, and the interest of the cities should be the interest of the citizens of the cities. And if the folks that are unincorporated now, they don't have a voice in that city, but the city's getting ready to run roughshod over them. And there needs to be some, I mean, I agree, this whole system is broken. I look forward to the work group, and I look forward to participating in that in a constructive way that can move this issue forward. But I just wanted to respond to that on the record, so...
You don't need to make any comment unless you'd like to.
I would, actually, okay. If you don't mind.
And
sure.
I would, too.
The opportunity.
Okay.
Thank
fair.
You, and I appreciate your comment. I would say from your testimony that the system and the situation, Eugene, is far different than Salem. And it seems like a much more insidious method. We were holding public hearings. We weren't doing chairing step annexations. We don't have the Border Commission,
right.
Boundary Commission. And so, yes, I am... graciously defending our ability to, but I don't think we have some of the same systematic problems we have.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, I'd like to raise an example to tell you why the City of Tigard is very concerned about this issue. In our jurisdiction, we're under Metro, and Metro has passed a policy of minimum density, and anyone who wants to develop a piece of property must build to the minimum of 80% of its maximum density. How you determine the minimum density differs between jurisdictions. For example, a piece of property that you could put 10 units on according to Tigard's calculations, if you're in Washington County, they can put 11. We're in the right now doing a comprehensive plan update. We're very concerned about density in our city. And the areas that are not in our city that are islands or immediately adjacent, they can develop at a much higher density than we can in the city, and eventually probably these areas are going to be in the city, and that's not good for the public as a whole. So I just wanted to raise that issue. It can be a negative to have county rules governing issues that's bad for the public as a whole. And the neighbors are opposed to it as well.
Thank you very much. We'll
thank
bring
you.
Our next report. Thanks.
Thank you. For the representative's information, the City of Salem does have voter-approved annexation, so all annexations go to the vote of the people. No further restriction.
So,
city people, just city residents.
Jerry Ritter and Julie Brim Edwards.
The people, the other people.
Right, right.
Mr. Chair, just a comment for the record. I mean, based on the previous testimony, it has really nothing to do with, per se, with them. And in looking at this, I just want to mention that the Oregon Court of Appeals and the Land Use Board of Appeals don't make laws. We, the legislature, make laws, and so they're there to interpret some of those things we did. I don't want the record to reflect that suddenly Luba is telling us all how to make laws in the legislature.
The other comment while the map's coming down, Mr. Chair, I would also encourage the cities listening, if we do pass a law, to not go create a land rush to circumvent the will of the legislature, because the timeline takes 90 days. Because I'm sure, I'm a freshman, but I'm sure that's happened before. I'm sure there are consequences to that kind of behavior on other issues, is my guess.
Yeah, I think we clearly need an emergency clause on this.
So I'll let you both and try to keep it as concise as you can. A couple minutes each, two or three minutes each. Go.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jerry Ritter representing Oregon Communities for a Voice in Annexation. And we urge you to seriously consider these fair reforms to ORS 222750. The reasons we have annexation battles in Oregon are twofold. First of all, people don't have a voice in some annexation decisions. And so the question before you today is really very similar to the one that was before the 2005 legislature. Should those most impacted by annexations have a voice? And that body answered that question loudly and clearly with House Bill 2484. And some of you on this committee had a hand in that decision, and we remain very grateful for that. But no sooner had the ink dried on that bill that we started getting increased reports of street annexations for no apparent purpose other than to create islands. Eugene, for example, since that time has annexed nearly 5 miles of streets. And as Representative Greenlick mentioned, some areas in Washington County are very concerned about what's going to happen when the Senate Bill 887 handcuffs come off of Beaverton, given the recent history. You know, we understand that as development happens, sometimes islands are created. And we're not trying to suggest that all island annexation be banned. But there needs to be some kind of reasonable conditions put on that, because really there is no legislative guidance that we're aware of right now, only case law. And the case law is very vague. It essentially says just that the annexations for island annexations, street annexations in particular, need to be reasonable. And reasonable isn't very well defined. Now, among the proposed amendments here are that we have clear and convincing need, and that's a very good start. But even that's a little bit vague, and I think we need to spend some time with that language to further clarify it, because clear and convincing is likely to mean something very different to a city as opposed to somebody being targeted for annexation. So we would like to suggest that that language get a little bit more work. The Senate Bill 887 work group on which we participated agreed that cities should not be annexing cherry stems, public right-of-ways for the creation of islands, but some of that's going on in the state, and that's why we need some legislative guidance on it. Cities can no longer use ORS 195 to forcibly annex territory, and therefore they are going to be more likely to go with the island route. So we're asking you to take the next step on this journey that was begun in 2005, and please enact some reasonable reform to ORS 222750, and I'll defer to my colleague here on that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. I'm Julia Brim Edwards, Nike's State and Public Affairs Director. As many of you know, Nike is located in unincorporated Washington County, and for the past 2.5 years, we've been involved in the region and the state discussion about annexation, and specifically the issue relating to island annexation in Washington County. I appreciate Representative Greenlick bringing the map. I had a smaller version, but I think when you look at the map, it clearly illustrates what has happened in Washington County over the last 10 years, in that the city of Beaverton created a web of annexed streets, and under the law didn't need to notify adjacent property owners, whether they were businesses or homeowners, either Cedar Hill, Cedar Mills, and then they very dramatically changed their annexation policy to say that they were going to essentially start annexing islands aggressively without property owners' consent. Nike is appreciative that many legislators have stepped up this session to look at the state annexation laws and hopefully to address some of these issues. We believe that fairness and balance should be restored to the state's annexation law, specifically with regard to the island annexation issues. We remain concerned, while Senate Bill 887 addressed Nike's specific concerns, we know that there's lots of other businesses, homeowners, property owners in unincorporated Washington County that are still encircled by those artificial, because Representative McPherson called them artificial islands, and that once the moratorium is lifted, things can proceed unless there's legislative action. So we would be supportive of the legislature, again, looking at public right-of-ways and street annexations, and really looking at what the intent and the spirit of what the island annexation law was meant to be. I don't think anybody thought that these artificial islands really were meant to give cities the right to annex properties without property owners' consent. So we look forward to working with legislators, other businesses, homeowners, in hopefully providing some, bringing some balance back into the equation. So people, a lot of the testimony and discussion today is focused on homeowners and citizens. I think this is a business climate issue, just knowing, talking to businesses in Washington County. So I hope that when we're looking at what reforms might be made, looking at the context of both from a business standpoint, but also individual property owners as well.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Thank you both very much. Next we have Linda Ludwig and Bob Rendy. And I will make sure that we get to the
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. First of all, the department has no statutory responsibility for annexation. We do have rules that direct local governments to conduct annexations in conformance with statewide goals and land use plans, but it's a very minimal role that we have. And we don't intend to be involved with these bills, and I'm not going to address them in particular today. Director Shetterly last session made a decision that we should, because of what I just reported to you, we would stay out of the annexation debates that were numerous and contentious. But he also asked me to come here today to make sure that you understand that the close link between annexation policy in the state and land use policy, and the fact that there has been, for some time, a disconnect between the land use policy and annexation policy, and we are concerned that that disconnect is getting worse, or could get worse, as we see each session more and more of the tools that cities have to annex land taken away or modified in a way that will make it more difficult for that annexation to occur. The land use policy that was enacted in Senate Bill 100 clearly envisioned a strong role for cities in that it directed them to adopt comprehensive plan, and I'll read from the directly from the policy of that Senate Bill 100, that cities and counties shall exercise planning and zoning responsibilities, including but not limited to cities or special district boundary changes, which shall mean the annexation of an unincorporated territory by the city. And this was enacted into the statute with the intent of encouraging more coordinated comprehensive plans for cities and counties that both created more livable communities and conserve farmland. Cities, beginning in the late 70s, have invested a considerable amount of citizens' time, money, and efforts into 20-year urban growth boundaries that essentially map the long-term growth of all of our cities, and include plans for providing services to those areas and for making sure that development would occur there so that it would not occur on farmland. As cities find their ability to realize those plans, and by the way, just this morning in our budget hearing, I heard, I think, for the umpteenth time, in this case it was the home builders, talking about the fact that we have these land use plans, we've spent so much time and effort in creating them, but they're not being implemented because we can't get the public facilities and other services that are necessary to carry out these plans into the areas that the plans envision. As cities become less able to urbanize areas that are either within them or very close to them that are within their urban growth boundaries, they are going to look, and they have been looking, to farmland. And farmland, typically you have one owner. The ability for cities to accomplish annexation of farmland is much easier than it is when we're talking about trying to put growth into areas that are not good for farming, because there are more rural parcelized areas, there are areas that are have been over time divided up, or for other reasons can't be farmed, and that would be the consequence, and I think is more and more appearing to be the consequence as we look at the data for urban growth boundary expansions, as cities find it more and more difficult to carry out the plans for the urban growth boundaries that were established throughout the 70s and the 80s. So I'll stop there, and I'm happy to participate as you go forward, but generally we're not going to weigh in into the details of these bills.
Okay. Mr. Chair, can I ask a brief question?
Brief.
Very brief. You talk about the disconnect between land use and annexation, and I'm intrigued with that. I have trouble remembering the goal numbers, but what's goal one in annexation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, goal one is citizen involvement, and I think the land use plans, all of them, were developed by cities and the citizens of those cities following goal one.
Not including the part that isn't in the cities, right?
So the question of having citizen participation by the people who were not in the cities and created those plans is something that your department would favor as a part of your number one goal on land use?
Chair Roman, again, Representative Greenlick, again, the plans were created by cities and counties and the citizens. And, in fact, I think you will find that counties vigorously defend their responsibility and their role in the adoption of every one of those urban growth boundaries. And those citizens also were part of those plan creations, whether they were part of the city or not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Linda.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Linda Ludwig, now here in front of you from the League of Oregon Cities. I want to make that distinction very clear. I want to be sensitive to time. I've given you, I think, two handouts. This one, let me touch on a couple of factoids that lead me into this concept. Very thankful to all the pieces of information that Representative Edwards have brought forward about the Lane County Boundary Commission. I just want to give you a couple other pieces to chew on as you look at the work group effort. In ORS 199 that guides Boundary Commission annexations, there is no contiguity standards for a property owner requested annexations. That is different than what other cities follow in 222. Also, the Boundary Commission has in 199 an expedited annexation method that requires no notice or hearing if it's approved by the property owner and the city. That's very different, and I just want you to be sensitive to that. They also cannot move forward with any kind of annexation plan annexations that are contained in ORS 195. So those are a couple of factoids. We heard about one annexation incentive that local government can offer citizens, the tax abatement for up to 10 years of deferred taxation. There's another one currently in statute. It's a delayed annexation where the annexation is complete, but it is not effective for a period of time, which can also be up to 10 years. The last little slide on this talks about annexation plans, ORS 195-205. That's annexation plan annexation, or otherwise known as urban service provider annexation. This is the one and only annexation method that was adopted since Senate Bill 100 in 1993. The property may be annexed in the area in the UGB if the urban service agreements are signed and an annexation plan is adopted. There's notice and public hearing required for this methodology, not subject to referendum. It's the only kind of annexation we have that's not subject to referendum. But there is a change that's occurred beginning in 2008. There is an election associated with this adoption of the annexation plan, and it has changed the voting requirement that will disincent governments, cities, to utilize this methodology. Let me tell you, since 1993, there's only three of these that have been done in the state. The requirements are quite stringent, but again, this is the only methodology that links with our current land use planning requirements. I have given my word to several representatives and senators in the building that I very much want to work on the island annexation, particularly the road and right-of-way issue this session. We need to find a solution to this issue. And so I have put together a concept for you to consider. Again, this is a concept. It's moldable, movable, but it bifurcates island annexation into two different methods, and it's this cover sheet that you have here. If the territory is encircled by a city in the island, or a portion of waterway, which I've chosen as newly defined, I've taken it from House Bill 2760, Representative Edwards' bill, that's a more limited use of waterway, but from my perspective makes sense. You can utilize the old method of annexation by resolution or ordinance that's in 222.750, but we also add that there is at least one public hearing, there's individual property owner notice, and I think concept from Representative Clem, if an election is required by a city charter provision, then you need to include in the election the folks in the territory to be annexed. Again, that is for the traditional kind of island annexations. If you want to utilize in that island boundary a portion that is a part of a right-of-way, then you skip to a modified and more stringent annexation plan that then is currently required in 195. In that annexation plan, it incorporates public involvement, quite a bit of criteria that you will see. Also, new to Oregon statutes would be a list of criteria that would influence the decision on the plan, including the character of the community, the need for municipal services in that area, utility expansion plans, financing of expansion, the estimate of tax consequences to the residents both inside and outside the expansion area, the interests of all the affected entities, and a statement of comments that may be that were made by the affected entities at the hearings. This is a concept for your consideration. I haven't really shopped it with cities here in the state. It also could include, in talking to several legislators, the blanket policy statement that's included in the work group's report, that encircling territory to create an island by the annexation of right-of-way would be prohibited or should not be solely used for the purposes of creating an island. And I added to this concept for your consideration that the part, the territory that is surrounded in part by a portion of some definable area, and this concept is not more than half of the city that contains only a public right-of-way or road. So that's here before you, and I would like to thank you for the opportunity to present this.
Thank you. So a couple questions, if anybody has one. Otherwise, I want to we have one person that's from over 100 miles away. So thank you. And so Mr. Fleener, if you'd like to come forward. There are two or three other people. We're going to run out of time, and I would like to set up a group and invite Linda and some of our representatives to get in a work group to start doing some of these things, and we will invite people if they want to, they would be interested in that work group, to get a hold of our administrator, and we will try, we'll put together a group of those people to sit and meet and committee members. I talked to Brian earlier if you'd be willing to be on there.
I'm finished with the Food Policy Council one, so why not take on a new one? Yeah.
I would hope you would consider it as well.
Yeah, I would love to.
Brian and,
yep.
and Brian. Brian and Brian, so from our committee.
Squared.
Okay.
Brian Squared.
So, Mr. Fleener.
Thank you, Chairman Roblin, representatives. In the concept of expediency, I would like to go ahead and concur with the four previous representatives and the state senator's comments, and more specifically with
make sure you announce yourself. And
I'm sorry. I am Bill Fleenor, newly elected Westland County Commissioner. Mm-hmm. I share a common district with Representative Edwards and Senator Walker. The portion of the county I represent is 1,200 square miles, and Santa Clara is the specific city that I'm interested in speaking about today. As a county commissioner, I have the unenviable task of adjudicating land use decisions that are brought to us before individuals, generally with their land use attorneys. Their land use attorneys generally try to interpret the very complex land use rules that are in existence, as modified from the circuit courts from LUBA and modified by state legislatures from time to time. Very complex. I represent three constituencies as a county commissioner. I represent the rural constituency, the constituency within the urban growth boundary, and of course the urban individuals. The most difficult constituency is within the urban growth boundary. Very complex. My predecessors back in the 80s, in order to make this much simpler, basically turned over the land use policy making to the cities through intergovernmental agreements and metro plans. I certainly understand their motives behind that, having sat in the seat for 65 days, but who's counting? I would like to encourage you that during your deliberations and work sessions that you try to develop language, policies, and procedures that are simple, easy, non-complex, because the more complex they are, the more difficult it is for us, the county commissioners, to adjudicate. And you're going to see many of these issues going before LUBA, circuit courts, and around and around. So as you deliberate, recognize that simplicity is really the best process here. And I also want to finalize by saying that, from my perspective, principle should precede over policy. We have individuals within our urban growth boundaries that have been there in the early 1900s. They're in their 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. These people are there not as a result of the legislation that we passed or the Senate Bill 100. That is not their fault. They are there because that's where they want to live. And any annexation policies or procedures are going to trump the reasons why they are there. So be very, very cognizant of the people. That is why we're here, to represent the people's interests. Thank you very much.
Thank you. There were three other people, and we will put you on the list when these hearings come back if you can make it back. If you have any written testimony, we will take it now. We can put it into the record. But there was Rob Handy, John Chandler, and Jim Seabury, who had signed up. We aren't going to get a chance to get to you today because a number of us are on another committee, which starts in a couple of minutes. So I want to thank all of you for the testimony that's been here today. And I would encourage you to get a hold of Beth Petrino if you're interested in the work group. We will probably keep it at a reasonable size, but we would like to know who is interested, and we will try to make sure that there are representatives representing a vast array of ideas on that group, because it doesn't work if you don't get those people. And I know that I've talked to Linda, and hopefully we'll be one of those people. So, and there's a lot of investment in this, so let me know. As soon as you can, if you can get that in by the end of this week, then we'll get something going starting next week. Any questions at all from the committee? Then, hearing no more, I will close our public hearing on 2760, 2050, and 2638, and we'll close our meeting. Thank you very much for all being here.